ज्ञानतिमरन्दस्य चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
We welcome everyone who's joined us online this morning. Please offer your obeisances all to the devotees online. Hare Krishna.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girivada Dhari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girivada Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. 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 Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girivada Dhari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girivada Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. 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 Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Pariraja Kacharya Stotara Sita Shishi Madhabai Charanara Vindabhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Pariraja Kacharya Stotara Sita Shishi Madhabai Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Anantagodi Vaishnavindi Ki Jai. Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Sagahoshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garad Harashivasari Gaur Bhaktivindi Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gokopinath Shyamakunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Shri Mayapur Navadip Dham Ki Jai. Shri Jagannath Puri Ki Jai. Tulsi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Jamuna Devi Ganga Devi Jalanga Devi Ki Jai. Samveda Bhaktivindi Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. Gaur Premanande Haribo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya, naram chaiva narotamam, devim sarasatim vyasam, tato jaya mudiraye. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 11. This is entitled The Transcendental Qualities of Vritrasura. Chapter 11, The Transcendental Qualities of Vritrasura. This is a summary of the chapter. This chapter describes Vritrasura's great qualities. When the prominent commanders of the demons fled, not hearing Vritrasura's advice, Vritrasura condemned them all as cowards. Speaking very bravely, he stood alone to face the demigods. When the demigods saw Vritrasura's attitude, they were so afraid that they practically fainted, and Vritrasura began trampling them down. Unable to tolerate this, Indra, the king of the demigods, threw his club at Vritrasura. But Vritrasura was such a great hero that he easily caught the club with his left hand and used it to beat Indra's elephant. Struck by the blow of Vritrasura, the elephant was pushed back 14 yards and fell with Indra on its back. King Indra had first accepted Vishwarup as his priest and thereafter killed him. Reminding Indra of his heinous activities, Vritrasura said, "If one is a devotee of the Supreme Personality of God and Lord Vishnu and depends on Lord Vishnu in every respect, then victory, opulence, and peace of mind are all inevitably available. Such a person has nothing for which to aspire in the three worlds. The Supreme Lord is so kind that he especially favors such a devotee by not giving him opulence that will hamper his devotional service. Therefore, I wish to give up everything for the service of the Lord. I wish always to chant the glories of the Lord and engage in his service. Let me become unattached to my worldly family and make friendships with the devotees of the Lord. I do not desire to be promoted to the higher planetary systems, even to Dhruvaloka and Brahmaloka, nor do I desire an unconquerable position within this material world. I have no need for such things." Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Dena Tasmai Shri Gavare Namaha Matsamo nasti papatma naparadi chakashana parihare pilajame kimbruve prushotama ivatinam yata yuni yunam cha yuvata yata mano biramate tadvan mano me ramatan tvai bhumau skalita paranam bhumireva valambanam tvai jata paranam tvame vasharanam prabho Govinda Balabe Radhe Prate Tvamaham Sada Twadiyamiti Janatu Govino Dhams Twayasaha Radhe Vrindavanadi She Karuna Vritta Vahani Kripayani Japadabja Dasyam Mayam Pridiyatam Hantaya Madra Balaharidasavar Yodhyadrama Krishna Charanas Parasha Pramodaha Manam Tanoti Sahago Ganayostayo Yat Paniya Suyavasakandana Kandamulai. So if you watch that, it's a Winona speed learning. The verses go by your eyes like that. That's how you get ready for Bhakti Shastra. In 5 minutes, I'll sell my program later that you can buy. Guaranteed, or your money back. So this section, this whole six cantos, very instructive in many ways. We come to this chapter, although for some of you may not have been reading the sixth canto, but we're jumping into this chapter because it is a culmination of sorts to a very long pastime that takes place in the Bhagavatam that has a lot of lessons in it. One of the great lessons starts off the cycle with Lord Indra in his heavenly kingdom sitting amongst his followers, worshippers, admirers, and as he's being worshipped, his spiritual master, Brihaspati, enters the assembly and immediately senses that Indra is not honoring him. He's staying on his throne. He doesn't get down. We've heard of this before. When Balaram was traveling and he met a Rishi who was sitting on his throne and didn't get down for him, Balaram noticed immediately what his mentality was, that he wouldn't honor Balaram. So Balaram killed him. And Brihaspati, when he noticed his disciple, was also in a similar mood. He didn't get down. He was so carried away by being worshipped himself that when his guru entered, he didn't get down from his position and offer his respectful obeisances to his spiritual master. So when Brihaspati came in to the assembly, he noticed this Romaharshan-like mentality, and he just turned around and walked out as basically a chastisement to Indra. And Indra then suddenly came to his senses. You know how that happens sometimes? You're like, hey, I'm cool. And the next thing you'll like, oh, I really made an offense. This is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why he describes one should always be humble. Because the mood in the material world is intoxicating. Actually, there's nothing here really to be intoxicated, or there is something to be intoxicated. Intoxication means there's some kind of poison. It's toxic. It gets in one's system. But there's a way in which I get that enjoying mood within my veins and I think I'm something I'm not. People, Prabhupada said, drink alcohol and they think, oh, I have gone to the heaven. But actually, they end up in really compromised situation because of that. And they become foolish. They appear foolish. They are foolish. And so there's a way in which when I become enamored of my position in this world or my learning, I think I know something. Like the Digvijaya Pandit, he thought he knew something. Indra becomes enamored of his opulence. And there are people who think they're very beautiful, and so forth. These kinds of intoxications take place. And then if one is sincere, there may be an event that divests one of that misconception. So Indra suddenly realized that his spiritual master had left the assembly, and when he came to his senses, he jumped up and they ran after his guru to try to find him again, but his guru had disappeared. He just disappeared as a chastisement to Indra. It means he had withdrawn himself as a kind of lesson from his disciple. And what happened? Indra lost his power. And all the demigods did, because he was the leader of the demigods. They lost their power, and then the demons got the upper hand. Very interesting to note, the demons had gotten the upper hand, the Bhagavatam says, because they had followed their spiritual master. Who was their spiritual master? Shukracharya. So there's a very instructive point in the beginning of this sixth canto, giving the importance of following the guru. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kutopi, dhyayam stuvam stasya yasas trisandhyam vande guru shri charanada vinda. Means three times a day I should stop and remember the mercy of my spiritual master. In fact, one should always consider oneself the product of the mercy of one's spiritual master and hold fast to the service there and always show respect. The Krishna himself says one should not consider the acharya, one's guru, to be an ordinary person. It's like, oh yeah, I know more than him. He blew it, you know. This is a kind of mentality in which one can lose the connection to one's spiritual master. So one shouldn't envy the representative, but one should follow carefully. So the demigods were easily defeated by the demons because our power doesn't come just from physical strength. It's not our own. It's coming from above. So they needed to have shelter, and that meant they needed to have a guru. So they had approached Lord Brahma in that case, and Brahma had recommended that they go to Tvashta's son named Vishvarupa. And Vishvarupa was a younger person, but he was very qualified as a brahmana and a priest. And they could accept the son of Tvashta as a priest and as their guru. So they approached him. And of course, they were warned that there may be a little discrepancy because he came from a family mixed with... gave him mixed allegiance to both the demons and the demigods. So Vishvarupa would do his fire offering, his yajnas, and he would offer sometimes to the demigods on their behalf and other times on the behalf of the demons he would offer. So they said, don't mind that. And they said, well, whatever, we can tolerate that. And they went very humbly to Vishvarupa to ask his guidance. And he said, you know, I'm younger than you and so forth. And they said, no, it has to do with experience. And we need you, we need to take your guidance. So please help us by performing these ceremonies on our behalf and guiding us. And he accepted them and he took that on as a duty. But later on, when he was offering oblations, Indra noted that he was offering some on the side to the demons, and he couldn't tolerate it. So he made another offense, and he killed Vishvarupa. Second time, he made a big guru aparad. And that's, I mean, he cut off his heads. Vishvarupa had three heads. Anyway, I won't go into a lot of the details about how each one of the head turned into a different kind of partridge, and two partridges and some other kind of bird. But in any case, after that, the father of Vishvarupa became very angry with Indra, and he wanted to perform a sacrifice in which he could get a living entity who would be the enemy of Indra, who would be able to kill Indra. He wanted revenge. So he performed a sacrifice, but in doing the sacrifice, he pronounced one of the mantras wrong, or his priest did. And what happened was, in a reverse syllable, that they got a living entity of whom Indra was the enemy. Instead of him being the enemy of Indra, Indra was his enemy, because the syllables got reversed. So that was Vritrasura. He was born from this special yajna meant to kill Indra, but he appeared from the fire. A very scary figure, huge in countenance, looked like he could swallow the whole universe. He had copper-colored hair, and he was gigantic and very powerful. So everyone was afraid of him. Who was Vritrasura? This is interesting why we're now in a chapter called The Glories of Vritrasura. You'd think, oh, he's a demon. Who wants to hear about him, and how is it that he has glories that are being extolled? Well, it goes back to the story of Chitraketu. And Parikshit Maharaj wanted to know the same thing. How did such a great soul end up in this situation, in the body of a demon? So he tells the story about how Chitraketu Maharaj was a great king, and he had everything except a son, and he couldn't get a son. This happens sometimes. Prabhupada mentions in his purports in this section that sometimes man and woman are sterile, but still somehow or other they get a child. Or sometimes there's a way in which both are ready to conceive, but no child comes. This is the nature of the material world. You think you have it all lined up, but you don't. We never do. There's a higher intelligence and power, and there are unseen ways in which we're being moved in the world. And Narada Muni advises, therefore, don't become overly attached to the situations you're in this material world, because they're a result of momentum from our previous lives. He says, Tasyaiva heta prayateta kovido na labhyate tad brahmatam upariyadad. There's a way in which we wander around this world, and you could endeavor to try to fix everything and get everything to go your way, but it just doesn't. This is also noted in one of my favorite pastimes in the Bhagavatam, in which the demigods and demons were fighting, which they do quite frequently. And the demons got help from the great software engineer. What was his name? Vishwakarma, yeah. He made some software so that it was actually a pool. He, Mrityu Sanjeevani, some kind of nectar pool that he made, in which when the demons were killed, he'd dip them in that pool and they'd come back alive again. Really hard to defeat an army where the people keep coming back alive again. So in that pastime, the demigods, and Lord Shiva was supposed to be the hero in this story, but he was being overwhelmed by the demons because they were coming back alive. So Lord Vishnu intervened, showing his superior power. And he became a cow, and Lord Brahma became a calf, and they walked into the assembly of the demons where this pool of nectar was, and they began drinking it. And all the demons were there observing that this was going on. Maya Danava was there, and they were aghast that their whole plot was being destroyed by this cow and calf, but they couldn't stop them. They realized these are Lord Vishnu has appeared, Lord Brahma has appeared in these forms. So they were powerless to stop them, and meanwhile, the cow and calf drank all the nectar and stopped their onward march to beating the demigods. And at that time, Maya Danava uttered the words that what has been arranged by oneself or others, or by both oneself and others, whether one is a demigod, a demon, a human being, or anyone else, can be immediately undone by the powerful force of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, one shouldn't put much stake in one's plans in this world. So, Chitraketu, thank you, was eager to have things go his way. As are most living entities. Every living entity has an idea that I want things to go my way. Yes or yes?
Yes.
And when things move against us, this is called calamity. When I have a desire, I want the world to be a certain way. I have it worked out that here's my comfort in life. These are my things. These are my people. This is my duration of life. and we get news that's contrary to that, the world moves against us, this is called some calamity, or it's called suffering. If one's malleable and is willing to adjust to whatever situations come one's way, then where's the suffering? And therefore, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is recommending that you learn to be tolerant of all these things that will come your way. Who listens? Not many people. It's a simple proposition, just tolerate, because things will come and go. And the world will move against your desires. But be flexible. Don't try to repair everything, but do your best, your level best, to move in this world, but go on chanting Hare Krishna. You can learn to do this. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yudhyacha mayarpita mano buddhir mami vaishyatsya samshayaha. I don't think I said the last line correctly. Mami vaishyatsya samshayaha. That without a doubt, if you go on doing the work that you have to do, because we're compelled to work in this world, but at the same time you remember Krishna by continuing in your devotional practice, especially repeating Krishna's names, recommended in this age, then Krishna says, without a doubt, you'll attain perfection. What other choice do you have? Well, the other choice you have is to just go on doing your work without remembering Krishna. That's another choice. But that's ignorance. And even against our will, we'll be forced to do things that we don't want to do. But if you go on doing your work and you're forced to do things that were against your will, but you remember Krishna, you'll have the intelligence and will remember that I'm not the controller. Krishna is the controller. That's an important point. Jeev Krishna das abhishvas korleto oduko nai. If you just remember this fact that Krishna is in control and I'm his servant, I'm doing these things for him, then you won't be overwhelmed when the world moves against your desire. So, Chitraketu. Oh, and I was going to make the point how I said it. You can easily learn to do this because I recently heard a lecture in which Prabhupada compared this verse, Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu, that is, doing your work and at the same time chanting Hare Krishna. Someone would say, how do I go on doing that? He said, just see in India, these women learn how to carry a pot on their head full of water, and at the same time they do all kinds of other duties. It just, how do you learn to balance a pot on your head? Well, you just practice. If every day you take a pot and put it on your head and you walk around and it just at first you take a few steps, the next day you take a few more, and then you start pretty soon, you know, your friends will come over and it's like, what's that pot in your head? Oh, I don't even notice. It's always there. That's a fact. You can learn to accommodate many different kinds of things in your life. And so this should be the underlying pot on your head, or the overlying pot on your head, which is that you continue to chant Hare Krishna amidst your various different kinds of work. So Chitraketu Maharaj was in this situation where he had a lesson to learn. He had a desire. He thought, I have everything else, but I don't have this one thing. This is also another lesson, and that is that unless we learn to be grateful for what we have. Someone mentioned it when we were talking about realizations about Yudhid. Be grateful for what you have, because if you're not, eventually it will be taken away from you in a way that you'll have to be grateful, because you don't know what you got till it's gone. So why don't you learn to be grateful for it now? And if you don't have that appreciating capacity, then even if you have everything else, you won't be happy. As though there'll be that hole in your life that I have to have this to be happy. That's the imperfection of material life, that I have to have this one thing to be happy. But it's not true, because even when you get it, it won't be satisfactory. You'll want something else, and it won't be what you thought it was in the first place. So Maharaj Chitraketu wanted a son. It seemed logical. He's a king. He has to have a son. So he then was offered a benediction by a sage, Angira, who observed the king and said, "I see you have everything, but you're not happy. I can tell by your face. What is it?" And he said, I need a son. So Angira, through his mystic potency, arranged for the king to get a son. He did a yajna. Head queen, Kritajuti, was able to get pregnant. She had a son. Things changed in the family. He had lots of queens, but this queen became his favorite because she had the son. And he started neglecting the others. Don't do that. Careful. Don't neglect people because they're very sensitive. This is one thing I was realizing in reading many of Prabhupada's letters and the way he deals with his disciples. He shows so much affection all the time. This is something everybody needs. They need affection. Everybody needs some affection, some consideration. You don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be a great manager to work with people, with a family or with a service group that you're working with in the temple. But you do have to be kind. You do have to see that people have their own natural genius. They have their own impetus. If you're just kind to them and try to give them some appreciation, some love, that's what everybody wants. So Chitraketu really blew it. He gave all the attention to one wife, and he focused all of his desires on this one child. And he thought, this is the fulfillment of my desires. Even though the sage warned him that you're going to get a son that's going to be the cause of both happiness and lamentation, he thought, that's the way the world is. That's the way a lot of people think. Take the good with the bad, that's the way it is. No problem, I can handle it. You can't handle it. Nobody can handle it. That's one of the great lessons of the material world. You can't handle it, so give up. Just give up. You can't do this. And it's not worth it. So what happened was something very diabolical and sad. And that was the other wives became so envious due to being neglected. And the fact that they had such low self-esteem because of the whole situation, which was out of balance, that there was not a healthy condition in the palace, that they became so envious that they wanted to kill the child. And they actually did it. They carried it out. I mean, if you can imagine such a thing, of being so overwhelmed by jealousy that you would kill your husband's child, because you felt so low self-esteem. And you would actually think, this will make me feel better. This is a product of passion and ignorance. We do things that are so irrational. But seems like a good idea at the time because of the mode of passion and ignorance. That's another lesson. Don't look before you leap. And if you feel any urge, talk to a sadhu before you do it. Always talk to a sadhu. Always have a mentor, an oracle in your life who can say, slow down, buddy. You don't need to put on so much heat. You got to slow down a little bit and consider the situation. We'll, you know, do it tomorrow, the next day, or reword the thing. Just ratchet it down. The mode of passion makes us ratchet things up in such a way that it's too loud. It actually injures others when we speak, just the nature of our voice, because there's some motivation in it. And the mode of ignorance, just no consideration at all, and it's just destructive. So modes of passion and ignorance influence these wives to kill the child, thinking that this will make me happy. That's how blinding are the lower modes of material nature. One could actually commit infanticide thinking that this will make me happier than I am now. Mode of passion, if I just get a new car, then I'll be happy. But it's not true. These things aren't true. And what we're getting after is the truth. The truth is that we're happy by service, and we're happy by surrender. So this was a lesson about to be learned by Chitraketu. Now, of course, having invested all of his emotion into this one child and one wife, at the expense of the entire kingdom, now child was killed. And what a shock it came to him as when he heard crying in his palace, he came home and he found everybody disconsolate and he realized the child was dead. What do you do then? What do you do then in your life when something like that happens to you? Well, you weep bitterly, you faint out of a sense of disbelief. There's a mechanism in your brain that causes you to faint because the situation is so incongruous with what you thought was going to happen and what was your actual desire in life that your brain just has to switch off. So that's what happened to Chitraketu Maharaj. He just fainted. And then he come back to his senses and he realized it was what was happening was real and he would faint again. And there's kind of a living nightmare that one can be in this world. A living nightmare. And then the sage came back. Angira and Narada came back to instruct the king in his complete grief. There was an opening for him to learn something. When he was completely helpless, now he was somewhat open. And Angira, out of mercy, induced the child to come back in his body and speak spiritual wisdom to the king, which included a dialogue in which they asked the child, why did you leave? And your parents are here. They're very, they're lamenting. They lost you. And the little jiva who's back in the body says, I really don't recognize them. I'm sorry. I've had so many parents. And that is a little bit shocking. We see when children who remember their past lives, there are documented cases from the University of Virginia where there's a couple of scientists there who study children specifically who start to remember their past lives very vividly when they're very young. And oftentimes the parents of these children, they'll comment, because the child will come up and they'll say, you know, I like my other mother better. I was like, what other mother? Yeah, my other mother. And the present mother becomes a little bit affected. It's like, you don't love me? Well, no, I love you too, but you know, I'm attached to this other mother because we're passing through from one life to the next. There's so many different mothers. So that living entity instilled in Chitraketu and his wife this perspective. It gave him this perspective that he could see, oh, this lamentation was misplaced because I was lamenting for something which is not worthy of grief. This material body and the living entity is just passing through and so forth. So powerful was his experience and his association with Narada and Angira that he became completely sober and ready to take up spiritual life completely. And at that time, Angira gave him a mantra to chant. And by chanting his mantra very seriously, with complete attention, he was able to have a direct contact, darshan, with Lord Sankarshan. Within 7 days? 7 days. He took no water, he just chanted. So if you want to try that, we'll leave the temple open for you. You can come here and just chant and not stop. So Chitraketu, after his practice, going through what he went through in his life and performing his practice, became a perfect person. And then it's described how he was traveling through the air on an airplane as a perfected soul. And he had Gandharvas with him, and he was flying over an area where Lord Shiva and his wife were congregating with some others, and Parvati was sitting on the lap of Lord Shiva. And Chitraketu looked down from his airplane, and he thought, here's this great soul, Lord Shiva, and right in the assembly of all these others, he's keeping Parvati on his lap. And he thought, this is an extraordinary sight. And he just laughed out loud. Careful. Shankar Pandit, one of my godbrothers, used to say, his mom used to say, laughing catches, be careful. Meaning that if you laugh at somebody else, they'll laugh at you soon afterwards. Be careful who you laugh at. Consider what your situation is. In any case, Parvati took exception to this. And she cursed Chitraketu that he would become a demon. And then, characteristic of Vaishnav, he accepted the curse. He said, I take it on my head, what you had said, and this is the will of the Supreme. And this is a recurring theme, because it solves all problems, actually. That is to take shelter of Krishna. One mantra Krishna gives us in the Bhagavad Gita is, Ananyaschintayantamam ye jana pariupasate tesham nityabdyuktanam yogakshemam bahamyaham. If you completely take shelter of me, absorb your consciousness in me, I'll carry what you lack and I preserve what you have. So if you remember that Krishna carries what you lack and preserves what you have, then there'll be no fear of these kinds of situations. Chitraketu then appeared as the great demon Vritrasura. So that's how he became the demon Vritrasura, because he was cursed. And this chapter starts off with Sri Shukadeva Goswami saying, O King, Vritrasura, the commander-in-chief of the demons, advises lieutenants in the principles of religion, but the cowardly demoniac commanders intent upon fleeing the battlefield were so disturbed by fear that they could not accept his words. Is everyone okay? Okay. So now he's gone into battle. His duty is to go and fight with Indra, try to kill Indra. And King Pritchett says, the demigods, taking advantage of a favorable opportunity presented by time, attack the army of demons from the rear and began driving away the demoniac soldiers, scattering them here and there as if their army had no leader. Seeing the pitiable condition of his soldiers, Vritrasura, the best of the Asuras, who was called Indrashatru, the enemy of Indra, was very much aggrieved. Unable to tolerate such reverses, he stopped and forcefully rebuked the demigods, speaking the following words in an angry mood. So the demigods were overpowering the demons. The demons were turning around and running away, and the demigods were shooting them from behind, basically. So Vritrasura became indignant upon seeing this, a breach of etiquette on the battlefield. O demigods, these demoniac soldiers have taken birth uselessly. Indeed, they have come from the bodies of their mothers, exactly like stool. What is the benefit of killing such enemies from behind while they are running in fear? One who considers himself a hero should not kill an enemy who is afraid of losing his life. Such killing is never glorious, nor can it promote one to the heavenly planets. Purport, Vritrasura rebuked both the demigods and the demoniac soldiers because the demons were running in fear of their lives and the demigods were killing them from behind. The actions of both were abominable. When a fight takes place, the opposing parties must be prepared to fight like heroes. A hero never runs from the field of battle. He always fights face to face, determined to gain victory or lay down his life in the fight. That is heroic. Killing an enemy from behind is also inglorious. When an enemy turns his back and runs in fear of his life, he should not be killed. This is the etiquette of military science. Vritrasura insulted the demoniac soldiers by comparing them to the stool of their mothers. Both stool and a cowardly son come from the abdomen of the mother, and Vritrasura said that there is no difference between them. A similar comparison was given by Tulsidas, who commented that a son and urine both come from the same channel. In other words, semen and urine both come from the genitals, but semen produces a child, whereas urine produces nothing. Therefore, if a child is neither a hero nor a devotee, he is not a son, but urine. Similarly, Chanakya Pandit also says, Korta putri najatena yo na vidvan nadharmikaha tanena chakshusha kim va chakshusha pidhaiva kevalam. What is the use of a son who is neither glorious nor devoted to the Lord? Such a son is like a blind eye, which simply gives pain but cannot help one see. O insignificant demigods, Vritrasura is speaking still, if you truly have faith in your heroism, if you have patience in the cores of your hearts, and if you are not ambitious for sense gratification, please stand before me for a moment. Purport, rebuking the demigods, Vritrasura challenged, O demigods, if you are actually heroes, stand before me now and try to show your prowess. If you do not wish to fight, if you are afraid of losing your lives, I shall not kill you, for unlike you, I'm not so evil-minded as to kill persons who are neither heroic nor willing to fight. If you have faith in your heroism, please stand before me. So here's emerging this great character, Vritrasura, who appears to be a demon, is coming to fight the demigods, but now he's showing his virtue and showing how to perform one's duty in the battle, and he's chastising both sides, the demigods and the demons. He's becoming the teacher for them both. 6. Shukadeva Goswami said, Vritrasura, the angry and most powerful hero, terrified the demigods with his stout and strongly built body. When he roared with a resounding voice, nearly all living entities fainted. When all the demigods heard Vritrasura's tumultuous roar, which resembled that of a lion, they fainted and fell to the ground as if struck by thunderbolts. Now this is serious. I mean, although it sounds like this is kind of entertaining or something like that, if you put yourself in the situation of battle, it's very scary. And one of my godbrothers was talking about before he was a devotee, and he said, have you ever been in a street fight, a real street fight? And everyone in the room said, nope. He said, I have, and it's very scary. He said, there was fighting going on, and then a couple guys came with baseball bats, which means that you could die, you know, having your head cracked open. And he said his immediate reaction was, run as fast as you can. He said, it's involuntary. To stand and fight, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, takes a lot of courage. When you're in front of, that's why Kshatriyas have to train all the time to have this mood of standing in, up in a fight when you could be killed. It's common knowledge that, you know, soldiers who aren't ready for these kinds of things go through trauma. They freeze sometimes. Their bodily functions involuntarily act and so forth because they're so scared. So these battles are very frightening unless one is a great hero. As the demigods closed their eyes in fear, Vritrasura, taking up his trident and making the earth tremble with his great strength, trampled the demigods beneath his feet on the battlefield the way a mad elephant tramples hollow bamboos in the forest. Seeing Vritrasura's disposition, Indra, the king of heaven, became intolerant and threw at him one of his great clubs, which are extremely difficult to counteract. However, as the club flew toward him, Vritrasura easily caught it in his left hand. Dink! O King Parikshit, the powerful Vritrasura, the enemy of King Indra, angrily struck the head of Indra's elephant with that club, making a tumultuous sound on the battlefield. For this heroic deed, the soldiers on both sides glorified him. Struck with the club by Vritrasura like a mountain struck by a thunderbolt, the elephant, Airavata, feeling great pain and spitting blood from its broken mouth, was pushed back 14 yards. In great distress, the elephant fell with Indra on its back. When he saw Indra's carrier elephant thus fatigued and injured, and when he saw Indra morose because his carrier had been harmed in that way, the great soul, Vritrasura, following religious principles, refrained from again striking Indra with his club. Taking this opportunity, Indra touched the elephant with his nectar-producing hand, thus relieving the animal's pain and curing his injuries. Then the elephant and Indra both stood silently. O King, when the great hero Vritrasura saw Indra, his enemy, the killer of his brother, standing before him with a thunderbolt in his hand, desiring to fight, Vritrasura remembered how Indra had cruelly killed his brother, thinking his brother was Vishwarup, because their common father is Tvashta. Thinking of Indra's sinful activities, he became mad with lamentation and forgetfulness. Laughing sarcastically, he spoke as follows. Sri Vritrasura said, "He who has killed a Brahmin, he who has killed his spiritual master, indeed, he who has killed my brother is now, by good fortune, standing before me face to face as my enemy. O most abominable one, when I pierce your stone-like heart with my trident, I shall be freed from my debt to my brother. Only for the sake of living in the heavenly planets, you killed my elder brother, a self-realized, sinless, qualified Brahmana who had been appointed your chief priest. He was your spiritual master, but although you entrusted him with the performance of your sacrifice, you later mercilessly severed his head from his body the way one butchers an animal. Indra, you are bereft of all shame, mercy, glory, and good fortune. Deprived of these good qualities by the reactions of your fruitive activities, you are to be condemned even by the man-eaters, Rakshasas. Now I shall pierce your body with my trident, and after you die with great pain, even fire will not touch you. Only the vultures will eat your body. You are naturally cruel. If the other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking me with raised weapons, I shall sever their heads with this sharp trident. With those heads, I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava and the other leaders of the ghosts, along with their hordes." These are some scary words. This is really how people start talking in a fight. You know, I'm going to kill you and your mother and everybody else. And, you know, just, it's very, in the heat of these battles, it's very severe and frightening. "But if in this battle you cut off my head with your thunderbolt and kill my soldiers, O Indra, O great hero, I shall take great pleasure in offering my body to other living entities, such as jackals and vultures. I shall thus be relieved of my obligations to the reactions of my karma, and my fortune will be to receive the dust from the lotus feet of great devotees like Narada Muni." Where'd that come from all of a sudden? I mean, this is the remarkable thing. Out of this great big demon who's, you know, uttering all these horrendous invectives, suddenly this statement of self-realization comes out, which is sometimes you can see if you're walking somewhere in a rocky place and out of all the rocks you see, there's a plant growing out. Bhakti can grow anywhere. It can appear from any place. It's not stereotyped in any way. Bhakti grows from bhakti. And wherever Bhakti Devi appears, then these qualities, these great qualities come out. Doesn't matter what the person's background is. And we've seen, because of Prabhupada's campaign, in which he took literally, and it is to be taken literally, the statements of Shukadeva Goswami that doesn't matter what background one is from, if one comes in contact with the process of devotional service and follows it, that person becomes transformed. Aprarada palam papam kutam bijam palon mukam karmaineva praliyante Vishnu bhakti ratatmanam. This Vishnu bhakti ratatmanam, this devotion to Lord Vishnu, if one has that, then all of the previous karmas, aprarada, that karma that hasn't appeared yet, but it's coming. Don't you worry, it's coming. Aparada palam papam. There's these fruits that are of sin that are now manifesting. Kuta bijam. There's seeds, there's partially sprouted seeds and so forth. All those things are destroyed. Karmani nirdahati kintucha bhakti bhajam. If one does devotional service, bhakti, to Govinda, then all one's previous karma that was planned out, that one deserved, it will be destroyed. Over and over again, the Shastras say these things, and one has to fully take shelter of the process of devotional service. So Prabhupada knew this, and he distributed Krishna consciousness to all kinds of people who were considered to be unqualified by the smartas, by those who just follow the rules and regulations and don't understand their meaning. And we saw, well, including in myself, so many unqualified people somehow or other come to the process of devotional service. I mean, but what I meant to say, we saw so many really obscure characters from all parts of the world come to Krishna consciousness, and we'd all look at each other and say, how'd you get here? It's like, don't ask. Don't ask. Because then you'll have to ask, how'd you get in too? Who let you in? Who let you in? Well, who let you in? Fact is that the power of bhakti is such that even those from from very sinful backgrounds can come to this process. And also, you can't tell who it is. When Prabhupada was at the Kumbh Mela, it was actually the Magh Mela. No, it was the Kumbh Mela. It was at Allahabad. And there were about 7 million people there. There are all kinds of characters that devotees had never seen before. 1971. All kinds of characters. The devotees, yogis were there, and the Nagababas, and dressed only in the four directions. And, you know, the devotees were asking Prabhupada, are any of these people for real? And Prabhupada said, oh yes, many, there are many yogis, he said, I've seen. They dip in one river and they come out in another place, in another river somewhere else. Come in the Ganges, come out in the Godavari, and so forth. And he said, so be careful how you should assume that everybody has some, is a great soul. Be careful. He told them to be careful. Don't offend anybody. So we should see that bhakti can be anywhere. It can grow out of any place, and it can come from anyone. So we should be careful how we move in the world. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, Sri Narottam Das Thakur writes, A chai gosai jar mui tar dash tan sabara pararinu mora prancha grass. What a beautiful line. Mora prancha grass means the five kinds of food that I will eat are the dust from the lotus feet of the devotees. I am the servant of the six Goswamis, and the dust of their lotus feet provides my five kinds of food. What do you guys eat? Dust from the lotus feet of the Goswamis. A Vaishnav always desires the dust of the lotus feet of previous acharyas and Vaishnavs. Vritrasura was certain that he would be killed in the battle with Indra because this was the desire of Lord Vishnu. He was prepared for death because he knew that after his death, he was destined to return home back to Godhead. This is a great destination, and it is achieved by the grace of a Vaishnav. Chadiya Vaishnava Seva Nishtar Payeche Keba. Please repeat. No one has ever gone back to Godhead without being favored by a Vaishnav. In this verse, therefore, we find the words Manasvinam Padraja Prapatsye. I shall receive the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees. The word Manas Vinam refers to great devotees who always think of Krishna. They are always peaceful thinking of Krishna, and therefore they are called dhira. The best example of such a devotee is Narada Muni. If one receives the dust of the lotus feet of a Manasvi, a great devotee, he certainly returns home back to Godhead. He continues. Who's continuing? O King of the demigods, since I, your enemy, am standing before you, why don't you hurl your thunderbolt at me? Although your attack upon me with your club was certainly useless, like a request of money from a miser, the thunderbolt you carry will not be useless. You need have no doubts about this. Purport, when King Indra threw his club at Vritrasura, Vritrasura caught it in his left hand and retaliated by using it to strike the head of Indra's elephant. Thus, Indra's attack was a disastrous failure. Indeed, Indra's elephant was injured and thrown back 14 yards. Therefore, even though Indra stood with the thunderbolt to hurl against Vritrasura, he was doubtful, thinking that the thunderbolt might also fail. Vritrasura, however, being a Vaishnav, assured Indra that the thunderbolt would not fail, for Vritrasura knew that it had been prepared in accordance with the instructions of Lord Vishnu. Although Indra had doubts because he could not understand that Lord Vishnu's order never fails, Vritrasura understood Lord Vishnu's purpose. Although Indra had doubts because he could not understand that Lord Vishnu's order never fails, Vritrasura understood Lord Vishnu's purpose. Vritrasura was eager to be killed by the thunderbolt manufactured according to Lord Vishnu's instructions because he was sure that he would thus return home back to Godhead. He was simply waiting for the opportunity of the thunderbolts being released. In effect, therefore, Vritrasura told Indra, if you want to kill me, since I am your enemy, take this opportunity. Kill me. You will gain victory, and I shall go back home, back to Godhead. Your deed will be equally beneficial for both of us. Do it immediately. This is a win-win. Stephen Covey in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And one chapter is about how create a win-win situation that if in all your dealings, make sure that whatever you do is mutually beneficial for others, otherwise don't do it. There's only one way to do that, by the way. According to Rupa Goswami, if you take to the process of Krishna consciousness and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, it's called all auspicious. And all auspicious means it's good for all living entities all the time. If you try to do other kinds of work that are separated from the idea of devotional service, then it may be good for one person, but not for somebody else. There'll be some discrepancy. This is very instructive that Vritrasura understood the purpose of the Lord. He knew that Krishna's will was behind it, and therefore he would not fail to do his duty. Even though he knew he was going to be killed in the process, he knew it was good that he was going to be killed because it was on behalf of the plan of Lord Vishnu, and therefore he would be victorious. So this is something to keep in mind as we tolerate the onslaught of material nature, is that if you stick to Shastra, Guru, and Sadhu, as you go through the various reverses in your life, and what could be a bigger reverse than suddenly being cursed and taking birth as a demon? I mean, you'll have to give up your present house and your present car and whatever bank balance and everything else that you have right now and relocate somewhere else in a different kind of situation. And that's disconcerting because I'm attached to what I have now. I think this is my stuff. But it's not my stuff. And once one connects oneself to the instruction of Lord Vishnu, be very clear what it is in your life and take it up and then hold tight to that, then whatever situation comes up, go on doing your duty in Krishna consciousness and you will be victorious. If you deviate from that, no matter how many arrangements you make in the material world that look temporarily beneficial for you, will in the end lead to your demise. Whereas, if you take shelter of Krishna's instruction, even if it looks like it's temporarily, even if it looks like immediately, it's inconvenient, in the end you will win everything. Yeme matam idam nityam anutishchanti manava. Krishna says in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, just follow my instruction, everything will be fine. Just follow my instruction, everything will be fine. On the other hand, he says in the ninth chapter, moga sha moga karmano moga jnana vichetasa rakshasim asarim chaiva prakritim mohinim shritaha. If you take shelter of this lower mentality that I am the controller, and you try to outdo the material nature, then he says everything will be baffled, everything you do. Your work, your cultivation of knowledge, and your goals in life, and your desire for perfection. Everything will be baffled. So this gives great heart to see Vritrasura doing his duty and just depending on the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He continues, O Indra, King of Heaven, the thunderbolt you carry to kill me has been empowered by the prowess of Lord Vishnu and the strength of Dadichi's austerities. Since you have come here to kill me in accordance with Lord Vishnu's order, there is no doubt that I shall be killed by the release of your thunderbolt. Lord Vishnu has sided with you. Therefore, your victory, opulence, and all good qualities are assured. Madhavananda Prabhu was pointing out while we were in Puri, and I liked this point. He said, the Lord always backs organized religion. He backs organized religion. Even if there's some anomaly, even if there's some fault, he backs it because it's good for the whole world. So he's always backing Indra and the demigods, their religious process. Then Vritrasura is saying, yeah, Vishnu is behind you. Just kill me. You're going to win. Vritrasura not only assured King Indra that the thunderbolt was invincible, but also encouraged Indra to use it against him as soon as possible. Vritrasura was eager to die with the stroke of the thunderbolt sent by Lord Vishnu so that he could immediately return home back to Godhead. By hurling the thunderbolt, Indra would gain victory and enjoy the heavenly planets, remaining in the material world for repeated birth and death. And Indra wanted to gain victory over Vritrasura and thereby become happy, but that would not at all be happiness. The heavenly planets are just below Brahmaloka, but as stated by the Supreme Lord Krishna, Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Punar Avartino Arjuna, even if one achieves Brahmaloka, he must still fall to the lower planetary systems again and again. However, if one goes back to Godhead, he never returns to this material world. By killing Vritrasura, Indra would not actually gain. He would remain in the material world. Vritrasura, however, would go to the spiritual world. Therefore, victory was destined for Vritrasura, not for Indra. Hari Hari. 21. By the force of your thunderbolt, I shall be freed of material bondage and shall give up this body and this world of material desires. Fixing my mind upon the lotus feet of Lord Sankarsana, I shall attain the destination of such great sages as Narada Muni, just as Lord Sankarsan has said. Purport. The words aham samadhaya mana indicate that the most important duty at the time of death is to concentrate one's mind. If one can fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, Vishnu, Sankarsan, or any Vishnu Murti, his life will be successful. To be killed while fixing his mind at the lotus feet of Sankarsan, Vritrasura asked Indra to release his vajra, or thunderbolt. He was destined to be killed by the thunderbolt given by Lord Vishnu. There was no question of its being baffled. Therefore, Vritrasura requested Indra to release the thunderbolt immediately, and he prepared himself by fixing his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. A devotee is always ready to give up his material body, which is described herein as Gramya Pasha, the rope of material attachment. What's it called? The body is not at all good. It is simply a cause of bondage to the material world. Unfortunately, even though the body is destined for destruction, fools and rascals invest all their faith in the body and are never eager to return home back to Godhead. So if you have the slightest desire to go back home back to Godhead, consider yourself very fortunate. Because generally the norm in this material world, remarkably, is that everyone wants to stay here and try to ride out the storm or find calmer weather somewhere else. And the Bhagavatam is convincing us that that's not to be. And it doesn't mean you have to live like an ascetic, but if you perform the prescribed austerity given by the Supreme Personality of God and you have full faith in Him, and you cultivate this remembrance of Krishna throughout your lifetime, then Krishna says, Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate tesham nityabdiyukdanam yoga kshemam bahamyaham. I'll carry what you lack and I preserve what you have. I'll help in all ways. You have to take shelter of Krishna's instructions in that way. Persons who fully surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always think of His lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as His own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems of this material world. When one possesses material opulence in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increase his enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. So here's what you get when you get more material wealth. Are you ready? Close your eyes and listen. These naturally increase enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. I'll say it one more time. By increasing your material opulence, you get enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. Look up belligerence. Thus one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. So then you get it, there's anxiety, and then you lose it, and then you feel bad about it. So Prabhupada had seen a lot when he started the Krishna Consciousness Movement, even within the established institution of his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The Gaudiya Math was a glorious institution, still is. There's a way in which all over India, the great teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were being propagated by these exalted personalities under the care of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There were frictions. There were different kinds of frictions within the organization. That's natural. These things will happen. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur warned Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, before Srila Bhaktisiddhanta left, he said, there's going to be a fire in the mutt. I mean, he sensed that these kinds of overwhelming differences would come up amongst the devotees. Prabhupada was always vigilant to try to keep the devotees on a very spiritual path. For instance, he was not so keen in devotees starting businesses within ISKCON. There were ways in which, again and again, devotees would come to him and say, I got an idea to make money, let's do candles. And Prabhupada said, candles means factories. We're not interested in making more factories, we're interested in making more Krishna consciousness. Incense was a small exception. Garga Muni started the Spiritual Sky Incense Company, but he told me personally that Prabhupada had to think about it for a while before he let him do it. He was very hesitant. And of course, Spiritual Sky only lasted a short amount of time, and it served a purpose, which is that it built the Los Angeles Temple and helped some other places to earn a little extra income. But that business got passed on and sold to a private enterprise and so forth. But there are other ways in which Prabhupada would constantly discourage devotees from diverting their attention from doing work in Krishna consciousness that would keep them fixed on thinking of Krishna. He especially emphasized preaching, book distribution, doing activities in Krishna consciousness that would remind one of Krishna, so one could be constantly in that mood. And he said to Garga Muni about business, Garga Muni is very expert at business. Prabhupada used to call him Garga Money. Because wherever he went, Garga Muni would make money. He'd just figure it out. As Badrinarayan Prabhu said about Charu and Vaibhavi, who live in Utah, he said, they could go to the dark side of the moon and make money and figure out how to make money. So Garga Muni was like that, still is. And Prabhupada told him that business leads to fighting and enmity and so forth. So we always have to be careful in our life to not sacrifice the principle of remembering Krishna. And when we make our decisions how to organize our life, think about it carefully. Don't sacrifice this basic principle, because if you worship Krishna, think of Krishna, do your duties for Krishna, then Krishna says, Vedeshu yagyeshu tapasu chaiva danesho yat punya palam pratishtam atyeti tat sarvam idam vaditva yogi param stanam upaiti chadyam. You won't lose. In fact, you'll surpass everyone else, those who are performing austerities, those who are very expert at fruitive activities, those who are studying the Vedas over and over again. If you stick to the straight and narrow path of Krishna consciousness, he said, you won't be bereft of the results of any of these things. So this is faith. Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kahi Sudhir Dainashchoy Krishna Bhakti Kaila Sarva Karma Krita Hoy. If I just do Krishna consciousness, everything else will come. And this we see in Ritrasura. And the purport Prabhupada says, in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, the Lord says, Yayata mam prapadyante tamstatayava bhajamyaham mama vartmano vartante manusha parta sarvashaha. As devotees surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O Sanaprita. Both Indra and Vritrasura were certainly devotees of the Lord, although Indra took instructions from Vishnu to kill Vritrasura. The Lord was actually more favorable to Vritrasura, because after being killed by Indra's thunderbolt, Vritrasura would go back to Godhead, whereas the victorious Indra would rot in this material world. Because both of them were devotees, the Lord awarded them the respective benedictions they wanted. Vritrasura never wanted material possessions, for he knew very well the nature of such possessions. To accumulate material possessions, one must labor very hard. And when one gets them, he creates many enemies, because this material world is always full of rivalry. If one becomes rich, his friends or relatives are envious. For ekanta bhaktas, unalloyed devotees, Krishna therefore never provides material possessions. A devotee sometimes needs some material possessions for preaching, but the possessions of a preacher are not like those of a karmi. A karmi's possessions are achieved as a result of karma, but those of a devotee are arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to facilitate his devotional activities. Because a devotee never uses material possessions for any purpose other than the service of the Lord, the possessions of a devotee are not to be compared to those of a karmi. Our Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development, and sense gratification. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. Text 24. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes. My words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship. So here's a clue how to always stay close to Krishna. And when we took realizations at the beginning of class, almost all the devotees talked about the power of association. I asked the question to the devotees who came early, why did you come here? And almost everybody said, I wanted to be with the devotees. It is the prime cause for advancing in devotional service. So when one becomes the servant of the servant of the devotees, as we'll see from this purport, one attains the highest position. This verse gives the sum and substance of devotional life. One must first become a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, Das Anudas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised, and he also showed by his own example, that a living entity should always desire to be a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamalayor Das Das Anudasaha. This means that one must accept a spiritual master who comes in the disciplic succession and is a servant of the servant of the Lord. Under his direction, one must then engage one's three propensities, namely his body, mind, and words. The body should be engaged in physical activity under the order of the master. The mind should think of Krishna incessantly, and one's words should be engaged in preaching the glories of the Lord. If one is thus engaged in the loving service of the Lord, one's life is?
Successful.
Correct. Everyone still okay?
Yes.
We're just sitting here in Bhagavatam. I mean, what could not be bad? I mean, what could be bad? Hex 25, O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvaloka, the heavenly planets or the planet where Lord Brahma resides, nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all the earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be master of the powers of mystic yoga, nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. Purport, a pure devotee never desires to gain material opportunities by rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. A pure devotee desires only to engage in loving service to the Lord in the constant association of the Lord and his eternal devotee associates. As stated in the previous verse, Das Anudaso Bhavitasmi. As confirmed by Narottam Das Thakur, Tandera charana sheva bhakta sanibas janame janame ho eyabilas. To serve the Lord and his servants of his servants. Did we get that part? In the association of devotees is the only objective of a pure unalloyed devotee. Okay, now this next verse is so intimate. I mean, he's coming out, the devotion, and therefore you can tell what is in the heart of a person when they speak. And now we're hearing what is actually in the heart of Vritrasura. There's a great devotee in that huge, gigantic, demoniac body of his. And here's a famous verse. O lotus-eyed Lord, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings, always look for their mother to return and feed them. As small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home, always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. Purport. A pure devotee always yearns to associate personally with the Lord and render service unto him. The examples given in this regard are most appropriate. A small baby bird is practically never satisfied except when the mother bird comes to feed it. A small calf is not satisfied unless allowed to suck the milk from the mother's udder. And a chaste devoted wife whose husband is away from home is never satisfied until she has the association of her beloved husband. 27, O my Lord, my Master, I'm wandering throughout this material world as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. My attachment to my body, wife, children, and home is continuing by the spell of your external energy, but I wish to be attached to them no longer. Let my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached to you. Happy? Yeah. Victory is always with the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the subordinate living entities. You can just look up here. They fight under the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Victory or defeat is not actually theirs. It is an arrangement by the Lord through the agency of material nature. Pride in victory or moroseness in defeat is useless. One should fully depend on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is responsible for the victory and defeat of all living entities. The Lord advises, Niyatam kuru karma tvam karma jayo hyakarmana. Perform your prescribed duty, for action is better than inaction. The living entity is ordered to act according to his position. Victory or defeat depends on the Supreme Lord. Karma nyeva rikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. You have the right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. One must act sincerely according to his position. Victory or defeat depends on the Lord. Finally, Vritrasura encouraged Indra, saying, don't be morose because of my victory. There is no need to stop fighting. Instead, you should go on with your duty. When Krishna desires, you will certainly be victorious. This verse is very instructive for sincere workers in the Krishna consciousness movement. We should not be jubilant in victory or morose in defeat. We should make a sincere effort to implement the will of Krishna or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we should not be concerned with victory or defeat. Our only duty is to work sincerely so that our activities may be recognized by Krishna. Oh, you found it. Pretty good. We'll take a couple of reflections. Yes. 1, 2, that's it. Go ahead.
Prabhu, I really like that point where you mentioned that you keep working and at the same time remember Lord Krishna, because you have a choice of working and not remember Krishna.
It's mathematical.
And if you are in this mood, then actually you realize that Krishna is the controller and you get the ability to tolerate these things. So that was a very wonderful point.
Let me just add, insert something there. What Prabhupada recommends in order to do that, when he comments on this verse in the 8th chapter of the Gita, Tasmat Sarveshu Kalishu, is that one should chant Hare Krishna constantly. This is the solution to all problems. We have to practice chanting all the time, because it's vitally important to chant in times of danger and especially at the time of death. And unless one practices throughout one's life chanting, even when you don't perceive danger, then you won't be prepared at the time of death. Next point.
I had one question,
though. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Sorry.
I had one question, though, where you said that the demons also got their power by actually following their guru, Shukracharya. So that was a bit intriguing for me, because currently we see there are so many false gurus around, and they are being innocent people are captivated by them. So such innocent people, will they also get the power by actually following their false guru?
Well, they get some false power, but it depends. I mean, there's a story in the Mahabharata about, what's the trumpet player's name? Your godbrother? Ekalavya. Thank you. Oh, Lokanath Maharaj's disciple. Okay, so then Ekalavya was a personality, I think, mentioned in the Mahabharata. Was he not? He was worshipping the statue of Dronacharya. And he got some power from that. But Dronacharya came by and said, oh, you're cheating. And he wanted Arjuna to be the best. And there's a lot of commentary around that verse about the kind of power that Ekalavya got by bypassing the system that didn't last, didn't persist. But there is a way in which in this sixth canto, it's described how dependent the success of the demigods and the demons are in following the authority. So if you act whimsically, then you don't get anything. If you act according to the authority, now Shukracharya is also Vedic authority, but he's become disqualified, especially in the pastime of Vamanadeva, by telling Bali Maharaj not to surrender completely. But Krishna says, you know, one should not act independently or whimsically. So there's, even we see in this material world, those who follow the prescribed authority, there's traction in that. One can develop that kind of traction. So it's not the kind of advice that we're given to follow a false guru like Shukracharya, but nonetheless, it's clearly mentioned here that the demons, because they adhered, they followed to their authority at the time, they got some power over the demigods temporarily. So there's a principle involved. Yes?
What to speak of the demons, even in the organized crime, you still have that things to follow to get some protection.
Still got to follow the mob boss, right? Yeah. Yes? Harivamsa Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Thank you for a wonderful class. I was just reflecting on the point. I heard elsewhere that the same story of Ritrasura is also mentioned in Rig Veda, but there the hero is Indra, and that Indra destroys Ritrasura and he is glorified. I was just thinking how Bhagavatam is bringing that Ritrasura, despite of having a demonic externals, is such a bhav, and he's, you know, giving this exalted principle of devotional service, and this also kind of instructs that whom are we being surrounded by, especially in association. I mean, and people are very special. So just when I think Prabhupada also spoke that be careful, you do not know who they are. So this brings out that point.
Yes. Kanka?
I like that point about the not knowing where things come from and realizing that everything's coming from Krishna. I was listening to a class this morning. Srila Prabhupada said, who knew that I would come to America? Who knew that I would meet my spiritual master? Who knew? And he made that point, how this is all Krishna's arrangement, that he had to leave his family and take sannyas. So that point that you made about seeing that as Krishna's arrangement, how Vritasura saw that this is all Vishnu taking part here, and that's my surrender, you know, not to Indra, but to Vishnu.
Yeah, thank you. Nice. Just adhering to one's duty in Krishna consciousness, despite the fact that there are unknowns ahead, as Kanka is mentioning, that Prabhupada went on performing his duty in Krishna consciousness and recommends that. Even though he faced obstacles and so forth. And one who does that then can search for the meaning in what is happening. There's a way in which obstacles or difficulties are not meant to obstruct, but they're meant to instruct. Should have made that the mantra for today. The obstacles, the difficulties, are not obstructions, but they're instructions. We should see it like that. For one who's following Krishna's instructions, one can take every difficulty, every obstacle as a way to learn, to become stronger. And we should do that. We should practice in that, seeing how can I look for the good in every situation? What is the essential good behind the situation? That's one of the optimist creed, one of the tenets. Another is that one should see the valuable lesson in every setback or difficulty. Can you do that? Another is always look for the solution to every problem. Henry Ford, don't find fault, find a remedy. But this kind of optimism, when devoid of a connection to one's duty to Krishna, can simply be wishful thinking. But when one is actually aware of the fact that Krishna is the supreme controller and that one's going to go on doing one's duty, you become aware of your own determination that I'm going to do my duty no matter what in Krishna consciousness. Then you're at liberty to find what is the remedy rather than find the fault and see the good in every situation. Oh, this is helping me. If you don't have that ultimate goal of reaching Krishna, as Vritrasura is showing us here, that I'm fighting, I'm going to die, great, please kill me now. That mood can only come from seeing the ultimate goal and having that determination in one's heart. Somebody had their hand up. Yes.
So, Prabhuji, how we read that materially, if we have material opulences, it creates enmity, the first thing. And then Prabhupada later on said that that's why he doesn't give like material possessions to his dear devotees. But the problem is sometimes devotees who are very loving and caring in the beginning also, because of the material world, become envious when one like really develops devotional qualities, and by bhakti also brings so many things along with it, like adoration. But we may not know, because they may have the right mood in accepting, but others become envious of them, because the wealth of the true wealth of bhakti is showing in them, and then that also creates some enmity. So how do we avoid being envious? Because the same concept applies in Krishna consciousness also, when amongst, like, they do more service or I do more service, that comparison and all that. And sometimes if the mood is not right, it goes to the point of creating actions, like how the Chitraketus otherwise does, sometimes people do in Krishna consciousness also. So how do we avoid that?
You have to chant really good rounds. Chant really good rounds, then you'll have your own satisfaction. If you chant really good rounds and you read Bhagavatam and you feel happy reading Bhagavatam, then you can think, I don't need anything else. You have to have some satisfaction in order not to be envious of others. If you're getting nourished internally and you also have loving relationships with advanced devotees, then you can feel nourished enough that when you see others thriving, you have your own wealth. You know, the ability to not envy is not just, it's not an intellectual exercise, like I'm not going to, although it's not a bad idea to curb one's urges to criticize others and to feel envy. But it's actually, it's something you earn. You have to be able to afford that kind of goodwill towards others, or appreciation. It's valuable. It's valuable. You actually have to earn it. It's something you can afford to do. I can afford, I have so much myself, I can afford to appreciate everybody else's success. And if you can't afford it, then you're just poor. And it's like, I have to envy. I can't afford any appreciation right now because I don't have any. So where do you get it? You get it from chanting Hare Krishna. Everything's there in Krishna's name. All nourishment is there. And in the Bhagavatam also, in the vibration of the Bhagavatam, which is Krishna himself, you get that. And you should take good guidance from advanced devotees, because they already have it in their heart. It's already digested. And you can get it in a pre-digested form. It's very valuable. That's why throughout the Shastra it's recommended to associate with sadhus. Mahatsevam dwaram ahuravam muktes. This is the door to real liberation from these bad qualities, is the association of the mahat. They're great. How are they great? They're wealthy. They're spiritual billionaires. They can afford it. You want a little wealth? Go to a billionaire. It's like, you know, can you chuck me a couple million? It's what's it to you? You know, you're getting that just off your interest, you know, it's like no big deal. And devotees, I mean, you know, a lot of billionaires are misers at the same time, some of them aren't, but devotees, the great Vaishnavas, they're like these billionaires, only they're spiritual billionaires, but the only difference is vanchaha kalpa tarubhyascha. They're the desire trees. They're just sitting there waiting to give it to somebody else because they got so much. It's just pouring in all the time. Where is it coming from? It's coming from their relationship with Krishna. When you have love, you don't need anything else. That's why prema pumarta mahan. This is the ultimate goal. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the author says, this is a ripoff. You're getting cheated here. Dharma proji, the Bhagavatam starts, this is for Paramahamsas. It's a dharma proji kaitavo. This is not for cheaters. This is for people who want the real thing, the highest goal. No more cheating involved. And what's the cheating? It's what everybody else says is like the highest goal in life. Doing your dharma. I said, that's cheating. You need love for Krishna. And if you have that, then you can become a Paramahamsa. Paramahamsa means nirmatsaranam. Nirmatsaranam. No more nirmatsara. No more affliction in the heart. So we're working on it. We should make that our project in life. And so we have to take shelter of really good japa. There's something that grows out of that that we can't even imagine. And don't try to second guess it. Just understand that this is what I mukta kalera upasyamanam. All the liberated souls, this is where they're taking shelter of their chanting. And if you do that, then you can succeed. And if you don't do that, then no matter what you do, it'll be a temporary arrangement. Manoratinasit davatobahi. You're just riding around on the chariot of the mind. A little flag up says, I'm a good person. Next day, it'll all fall apart because it's all temporary. So, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvar gunas tatra samasate suraha. This verse means that when you chant Hare Krishna, when you do bhakti sincerely, stick to this simple path, do it the simple path strictly, then you'll get all these good qualities. And what does it mean? Suraha means that the demigods will want to come live in your house. They want to associate with you because your qualities become so exalted. That's what the acharyas say that this verse means, that for those who are performing devotional service, they become, the demigods want to live with them because of their good qualities. So you have to afford it. It doesn't come cheaply. It's not just something to say, I won't be envious today. But you have to chant Hare Krishna today, seriously, and really take shelter of that and Srimad Bhagavatam and spreading the Sankirtan movement all over the world. Prabhupada emphasizes this over and over again, that this is our part of our bhajan. In the 1971 the Kumbh Mela, all the devotees were there, and there were so many different groups there setting up tents, and they all were in their tents doing their different chants and pujas and everything like that. And Prabhupada said, our real sacrifice and worship is preaching. He said, we've come here to preach. He said, this is the highest kind of worship, to do this. And he set the example how to do that all over the world. So if we just stick to, like one god brother I was talking to the other day, I liked what he said. He said, Prabhupada put all the ducks in a row. All you have to do is just take it. Prabhupada told Jamuna that I've given everything that's necessary. If you just follow it carefully, then the result will naturally be there. So just go on. That's the natural result of associating with Krishna and his devotees. Vritrasura Prabhu ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Priya Kishori ki jai. Krishna. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Hey! Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman.